Good morning, everyone. It is September 17th, 2021. This is the ADK Homeroom, my home away from homeroom and your home away from homeroom. Coming to you from the Adirondack Mountains. A little sniffly today. Sorry about that, but the allergies are here. On the other hand, we also have gorgeous fall color starting to appear. Anybody in my hometown that was at our town's little kitty soccer practice last night, the kitties were a little wild last night, weren't they? They were running and giggling and laughing. But B, those trees, we have these four maple trees right along the fence as you turn into the soccer complex over there. And they look like Christmas trees yesterday because most of the tree was still completely dark green, but about one out of every 100 leaves had turned this vivid scarlet vermilion color that was brilliant. And like I said, it looked like Christmas trees with the red leaves as the ornaments just hanging on these dark green Christmas trees. Oh, gorgeous last night. And we've had beautiful sunsets the last 2 days too. Hope you have had a chance to check it out. We're going to change our format a little bit. Again, we're going to do, as promised, the news roundup, and we're going to have a deep dive today. Very excited by request. We're going to have a deep dive into how our school district was able to stay open 5 days a week in person last year when all the surrounding districts and most districts in the country were closed and only open remotely for at least part of the time. We were in school 5 days a week in person all year long. But that is actually going to be in a separate podcast that I'm uploading, because we're going to try to break this into two pieces. We're going to do the news roundup here, and then we are going to do the in-depth focus on that one topic of how our school district was able to stay open all last year. That's going to be in a separate file uploaded also today, September 17th. So check that out. Here we go with the news roundup then. Let's continue with the science fact of the day. As always, our slogan today, I can't believe we made it this far without a Taylor Swift slogan. Our song is the slam screen fact, the first fact when I didn't kiss her when I should have. All right, love Taylor. Today we're going to go over misconceptions in science, some common misconceptions. Number one, a lot of people think blood in your veins is blue. No, blood is not blue in your veins. Blood is always red. It only appears blue sometimes because of the way that light is transmitted through the flesh to your eyes. Even after blood has dropped off its nutrients and its oxygen in the cells, and it's on its way back to the right atrium there, then the right ventricle, then the lungs, even when it's coming back like that, it's still red. Your blood is red. The light that reaches your eyes might be blue, because the other wavelengths get absorbed by the flesh in between. It has to do with how the light is transmitted to your eyes. The blood, though, is still red there. Next misconception in science, you get bigger as you grow up because your cells get bigger. No. I hadn't heard that one till recently, so I don't know where that is popping up from, but no, your cells don't get bigger. You might get more of the cells, but they don't get bigger. By the way, what is the biggest cell in the human body? That would be the egg, the ovum. It's a tenth of a millimeter wide, which actually means that some people can see an egg cell, an ovum, a human ovum, with their naked eye. Number three misconception, toilet water spins in opposite directions in the North Hemisphere and South Hemisphere. No, that absolutely is not true. There is such a thing as a Coriolis effect, but it is way too weak to show up in something like a toilet where you have injected water and you have plumbing effects and the shaped bowl. It's just not going to show up. You can find videos of scammers out there, by the way, on either side of the equator, places like Ecuador, taking money from tourists, walking back and forth and scamming them, showing them, oh, water flows this way on this side and that way on the other side, or it spins that way when it goes down the drain. No, that's a trick that doesn't really happen. Next misconception. String theory is physics theory of everything. That's not true. It's actually more a theory of nothing. Oof, I am struggling with the allergies. Just like physicists are struggling with unifying gravity with the other three forces. There's no evidence for string theory, guys. It's beautiful math. the math is nice, it works out, but it doesn't make any predictions. String theory is not testable. You've got people like Gordon Kane from my alma mater, University of Michigan. They've been saying for 30 years now, oh, any experiment, this one's coming up. LHC, oh, it's coming up. We're going to have it. We're going to have evidence for string theory. They won't say what the evidence is, first of all, or they will, but it doesn't make sense when you really get down to the nitty-gritty of it. And then it never happens. Nina Arcini-Hamed, he just won't let go of this. Supersymmetry particles, sparticles, they have not been found. Every string theorist was really hoping they would be, hoping that they would be found in Large Hadron Collider over at CERN or in experiments, particle experiments even before that too. And they've never been found. I'm sorry, string theory is gorgeous math, and it can be useful in some respects for investigating that math, but it is not a theory of everything. It is far from proven, as Peter Woit says. It's not even wrong. It's so bad it's not even wrong, because it doesn't make any predictions that you can say are right or wrong. So string theory, not a theory of everything. It's a theory of nothing. And the last misconception I want to point out today, a lot of times people say things like, oh, you only use 10% of your brain. No. First of all, we really don't understand the brain well at all. We don't understand consciousness. So any statement like that is just pie in the sky. It's just shooting into the air and hoping you hit something. We really don't understand the brain works. But to the extent that we do, and we have, you know, we're getting better at it. We can have brain implants that control muscles remotely, for example. That's pretty cool. To the extent we do understand the brain, we're using all of it. You know, you put it in the MRI machine, it lights up in all parts. You measure the blood flow. There's blood flowing to all parts. It's lots of neurons firing there, lots of tissue lighting up all over the place. You use your brain, not just 10% of your brain. That is a misconception. Now let's get into the news. So we got to start off here with General Mark Milley. If you haven't seen what happened here, Bob Woodward, the same investigator from Watergate, he's still at it. Same guy who was investigating Nixon back in the early 70s. Bob Woodward just put out a book with co-author, and they quote Mark Milley, General Mark Milley from the Joint Chiefs of Staff, saying that in the last days of the Trump administration, he, that is General Milley, did two things that are objectionable. Number one, he called up China and said, hey, you know, we're stable here. It's all good. And then he said some worse things than that. I'll get to that in a minute. And the other objectionable thing that General Milley did was he sat down a bunch of other generals and he said, now look me in the eye and tell me you understand your exact role in the chain of command. Well, that's fine. You can do that. But there's an interpretation that what he was basically telling them, in fact, probably obviously telling them, is if Trump hits the red button and says launch the nukes, you got to check with me first. Now, he didn't say that out loud in so many words, but wink, wink, nod, nod. That was clearly the intent of what he was doing. He was subverting the chain of command, in other words, because Trump is the commander in chief. Now, General Milley would say he wasn't doing it, but by the letter of what he was saying, he was just saying, check in with me and make sure that I'm in the loop and make sure you know exactly what your job is. Okay, fine. You know, he could get a pass on that legally, at least, because the wink, wink, nod, nod sort of thing is pretty hard to prove in court. I think that's obviously what he was doing, though. Now, the second thing is more problematic. So when he called China and he said, you know, Chinese, my Chinese dudes, my droogs, calm down. We're not going to attack. And here's the quote. I'll just read you the quote from the book here. What the book says happened. General Milley called up General Lee, and possibly an ironic name right there, right? Called up General Lee, and he said, I want to assure you that the American government is stable and everything's going to be okay. We are not going to attack or conduct any kinetic operations against you. General Lee, you and I have known each other for 5 years now. If we're going to attack, I'm going to call you ahead of time. It's not going to be a surprise. What? What? Did this guy even go to general school? Are you kidding me? Little refresher for you here, General Milley. You don't warn the enemy when you're going to attack. That is bad fighting. Right? You're supposed to be doing good fighting. Surprise attacks are kind of important. Spanish Inquisition knew how to use surprise. So, look, telling your enemy that if you're going to attack them, you're going to call them ahead of time, that is bizarre. Maybe he didn't even say it, right? This is just a report in this book from Bob Woodward, but tremendously respected journalist, right? So as such a tremendously respected journalist, one doubts that in his twilight years, I won't say his senescence, in his twilight years, you doubt that he is descending into senescence. You doubt that he's risking his entire life's career by misreporting this. Who knows? If General Milley did call up and say, don't worry, I'll call you before we attack. Yeah. That's really bad. You have senators like Marco Rubio saying that's treason. That's a very serious accusation, but this is a very serious thing that General Milley did. So here's what needs to happen. There needs to be a full investigation. You need to get General Milley under oath, testifying before Congress or before someone under oath. You need to get to the bottom of this and find out what happened, because that is extremely serious. The other part is serious, too. The wink, wink, nod, nod stuff, subverting chain of command, that's really subverting civilian rule over the military, right? That's one of the amazing things about our country and modern countries, is that we have put the military under civilian rule. The military doesn't command the entire government. And for that to be weakened by an event like this is very, very dangerous, very bad precedent. So people need to get to the bottom of this. There needs to be an investigation. Full bore, that needs to be high, high, high on the government priority list down there in D.C. Now, number two on the news list. My wife always says that she likes how this podcast gives you news that she doesn't find anywhere else. And I think that in a lot of cases, that's just the hard science news that she's talking about. So here we go. Here's one just for her. I'm not sure if you saw this hard science news. We've got an Italian physics experiment that's been making a lot of waves, saying that they have detected or may have detected dark energy. This is the xenon 1T experiment. All right, spoiler alert, they did not detect dark energy, right? They said they may have detected it. They did not. So one day we will do an in-depth look at dark energy, and another day we'll do an in-depth look at dark matter. But for now, super quickly, dark energy is this idea that came about after 1998. And up till 1998, we thought that we were in really good shape in understanding the large-scale structure and evolution of the universe. We thought that the big question was, after the Big Bang, is the expansion of the universe slowing down enough that it will eventually contract in a reverse Big Bang, a big crunch, or is it just going to slow down enough so that it eventually asymptotically approaches sort of a zero expansion speed and just kind of peters out that way? Well, in 1998, we made these observations, and it turns out that our universe is in fact accelerating its expansion. So after the Big Bang, things did stop, their acceleration, their expansion did drop off for a while, but after that, it picked up again, and the rate of expansion is increasing. It's an accelerating expansion, and we had no idea why it's doing that, right? If you could see me in the classroom or somewhere right now, so the my arms go out, and then they sort of slow down, and then they zoom back apart again. That's what happens to our universe. That is what is happening to our universe. We have no idea why it's accelerating its expansion, so we made up an idea. Our idea is called dark energy. We said, oh, well, the universe is getting torn apart, there must be a reason for that. It must be a thing called dark energy. Ah, ha ha ha! There we go. And some people will say that there's various explanations for dark energy, like maybe it's the cosmological constant in Einstein's general theory of relativity, things like that. We'll get into that more when we do our in-depth discussion on it. But for now, dark energy is this thing that's making the universe rip apart, go apart faster. And these guys in Italy say that they may have detected it. Well, really, what they did is they took this giant detector. It's under a mountain over there to cancel out extraneous signals or superfluous signals, so they only get real signals from what they initially hoped was dark matter. Now, dark matter is something completely different, and this experiment was actually originally designed to detect dark matter, but this recent study that's getting news is these physicists over there looking at their results and saying, oh, well, you know what? We did get some signal, and the signal was good enough to get Elena April from our experiment over to Columbia University, by the way. So let's reanalyze the signal. Let's look at it a different way. And they built a model of dark energy, and they cobbled their model together, and lo and behold, their model is consistent with the results that they had from this detector under the mountain over there. I think you can see the problem here. You don't have to be a physicist to see this problem. You can see that they already knew what their results were, and then they built their dark energy model to, well, I'm sure they wouldn't say this, but they built their dark energy model to match up to their results. So questionable there, very questionable. And there are many theories of dark energy, and their dark energy model, of course, it needs to make some new predictions. It needs to make some new testable predictions, and we'll measure those and see if it comes out to fit with their dark energy model. By the way, in this model, it doesn't exactly say what dark energy is. It just describes the effects that dark energy would have. So not excited at all. If you see that headline going around, Italian physics experiment may have detected dark energy, no, not excited at all. All they did was take some old dark matter results and build a dark energy model around them to be consistent with that. And again, it doesn't even really say what dark energy is exactly. It just describes some of its effects. Next news item. There's this new map out going around the internet. Says in the United States, how many people don't have internet? Do you want to guess? There are about 330 million people in the United States. So you want to guess, according to this new map, how many don't have the internet? The map was produced, by the way, by a real estate company. Lightbox is their name, and they are the ones who put this out there. So out of 330 million people in the United States, according to this map, 60 million, that's about 18%, do not have the internet at their house. That number seems a little high to me. As you can imagine, it's clustered in the rural areas around the country. On the other hand, from 2009 to 2011, I did teach in a school in a very rural district in New York. Everybody there almost had, you know, completely free school lunch, very impoverished district. And I would say, you know, just observationally, about a third to a half of the kids there didn't have internet at home. So maybe. The other interesting thing about this new figure, much of the other research says it's less than 60 million. It's down to maybe 5% instead of 18%. But this study is saying 18%, 60 million. And it's interesting that if you look at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's numbers, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture is actually the official word on rural America, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture's recent numbers, there are, guess how many rural Americans? 60 million. Huh. But I have to say, I'm one of those, and I have an internet connection. It's not a great internet connection, let me tell you. Sometimes my League of Legends and Elder Scrolls Online experiences are quite impacted by that. Thank you for the high ping spectrum. Especially when there are a zillion tourists up here and it's 8 o'clock in August. I play Dungeons and Dragons online too with my friends from the city, and they can all get on fine at 8 o'clock in August. But me trying to listen to them sounds like Samira trapped at the bottom of the well. Their voice is coming up to me. I catch every other word, and it sounds like a ghost coming to me from the other side sometimes. So it's not the best internet connection here, I will say that. Declining, by the way, too, of course, the population out here. Our school district here in the heart of the Adirondacks, our school district population has declined just about 10% in only the last 5 years, about 23% over the last 20, 25 years. The neighboring district over there, over 30% down since 2000. They have dropped off a cliff. One out of every three kids just gone there. People aren't living here. That's ironic, by the way, right? Because you talk to anybody, you talk to the tourists, they come up here. Oh, I love the mountains. I love the lakes. I hate big box stores. Oh, it's terrible. But then where do they choose to live? They don't choose to live with the mountains and lakes. They choose to live with the big box stores. So I don't know about that. That's a little hypocritical, perhaps. And I can sort of get that. You have to drive an hour and a half here to get to a Walmart. That's iffy. You have to drive an hour and a half here to get to a Texas Roadhouse. That one hurts. Love me some Texas Roadhouse. But, you know, lakes and mountains are pretty awesome, and I'm willing to do that. But it appears, you know, that a lot of people aren't. Anyway, so how do you reverse that decline out here? Well, you stop voting out Walmart. A lot of towns around here voted to not let a Walmart or any big box stores like that come in. You let business happen. What's going on here in the Adirondacks? We've got this thing going on. The Adirondacks are so beautiful that the state is treating them just like the patriarchy used to treat beautiful women, right? Beautiful woman, what do? You lock her up, put her away, keep her safe. And of course, that's not for the woman's sake. It's for the sake of whoever's locking her away. Not a good thing to do. And that's what's going on with Adirondack Park. You've got this beautiful, beautiful area, and everybody says, oh, we got to keep it safe. We got to lock it away. And they're constantly trying to decrease the number of tourists up here. They cut down on the parking spaces for the hiking trail. They make it very hard the last few years to come up here and hike. Now you have to reserve a hike on the most popular trails, if you can believe that. It's nuts. That needs to change if you want to reverse the population decline here in the Adirondacks. Let's go on to news item number four. News item number four I mentioned to you yesterday was this Boston University professor, a terrier. The terriers of Boston University. This professor fell through a stairway and passed away just over last weekend. Very strange case. It was an abandoned MBTA train station. That's like their commuter transit line there. And he was out there climbing around in the stairway. You can find the pictures of it. It looks like this metal staircase going down. And then there's a bunch of stairs missing right in the middle of it. And you can see the clouds peeking through. So it's about 20 feet above a concrete surface. And apparently this professor was just walking down the stairs and fell through to his death. So, interestingly, not only did he have a degree from my alma mater, the University of Michigan, he was a professor in the School of Public Health. It's been a bad year for the judgment of epidemiologists, my friend. Bad year for that. So what was going on here? We're not sure. His wife says he was out for a run, and so I guess we believe her. When I first read the story, what it made me think of was that Creepers book by David Morrell. And David Morrell, of course, created Rambo. Fantastic character, one of the iconic late 20th century fictional characters. But David Morrell also has a book called Creepers, where he talks about urban explorers. And it's this phenomenon, this hobby, where people like to explore abandoned urban installations or abandoned urban structures, and it's dangerous. So don't do that. There's your warning. Don't do that. You have to respect nature. Whether you are out here in the Adirondacks and you got to bring water with you on the hike, or you're in the middle of the city and you have to respect the ability of nature to break down things. If something's abandoned for 2 years and it's not being maintained for 2 years, nature is going to work. The second law of thermodynamics, folks, it's pretty important. Entropy always increases. Things fall apart, as Yeats would say. And unfortunately, I guess that was a bit of a pun. Public health professors fall down through staircases. It's terribly sad, and our condolences go out to his family. Reminds me a little bit of the start of season 2 of American Horror Story, also, when they're exploring that old abandoned asylum. Now we're up to number 5 on the Friday news rundown, and number 5 is the Friday pop culture quiz. Here we go, no explanation needed for this. Which is greater, the number of original Planet of the Apes movies or the number of new Planet of the Apes movies? Say it one more time. Original Planet Apes movies with Charlton Heston. Player, thespian Charlton Heston. Love me some Chuck. Fan of peanut butter, Chuck was. Always used to bring it with him over to Europe so he'd have some over there, because Europeans, not such big fans of peanut butter, at least back in Chuck Heston's heyday. So number of original Planet of the Apes movies versus number of new Planet of the Apes movies. The original by 5-3, or to four if you count Tim Burton's movie, which really, it was newer, but it wasn't really part of the Caesar trilogy. By the way, if you don't know, the original was based on a novel by French science fiction author Pierre Boulle, and Pierre Boulle's novel has a different twist ending, possibly better than the movies. Recommended. Next item on the pop culture quiz, which is greater, Al Bundy's single game touchdown record or the number of wizard schools competing in the tournament in Goblet of Fire, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire? Al Bundy's single game touchdown record or number of wizard schools? The correct answer is Al Bundy, of course. He scored 4 touchdowns in one game for Pokai. Come on. And it was the Tri-Wizard Tournament, right? So 3-3. So 4-3 right there for Al Bundy. All right, next item on the pop culture quiz. Number of Shakespeare's plays versus number of James Bond movies. Which is it? Shakespeare plays is correct. 38-24, or 25 if you include the Bond movie coming out this fall. Next, number of Ballon d'Or won by Messi or Ballon d'Or won by Cristiano Ronaldo, CR7. Of course, the Ballon d'Or is the golden ball given to FIFA's best male soccer player of the year. Who has won more? The answer is Messi, and he's younger too, actually. Messi, 6-5. 6-5 takes it. Last question in the pop culture quiz for today. Which is greater, number of Infinity Stones or number of Super Bowl championships for Tom Brady? Well, if you said Tom Brady, because you detected the University of Michigan theme in today's podcast, well, then you got it right. Tom Brady, 7 Super Bowl championships, and there are, of course, 6 Infinity Stones. 6 Infinity Stones, I don't know, man. Did they kind of lose their luster? People out here just barehanding Infinity Stones left and right? Get it? With Tony Stark doing that in the comic books, it was a little bit different. Not to go all hipster Marvel guy on you, but I did have a lot of Marvel subscriptions back in the day. And Doctor Strange and Iron Man led the list. All right, our last item on the news roundup for today is this Bangladeshi mask study. It's actually a Yale study, I should say, set in Bangladesh. Made tons of news. People said, finally, we have an RCT that says or that proves that masks do make a difference. And sure, it only proved it for people older the age of 50. But at least we finally had some evidence, and yes, it was only about a 0.76% down to a 0.69%, so a difference of 0.08% or a factor of about 10%. and the seropositivity, that works out to be like 15 people out of 32,000 people. So it's this very small signal, but they were saying at least finally we have, after, you know, a year and a half of this pandemic, we have some evidence that all these masking rules that we're forcing on our kids, we're taking our kids' faces away, and it's worth it. We have this evidence. Well, not so fast, my friend. Got to watch Lee Corso tomorrow. Not so fast, my friend, as Lee Corso says, because now people are starting to pick holes in this study. I still think it is a pretty decent study. It's by far the best, right? If you look at the other studies that have all come out purporting to support the idea that masks are useful, they're really all bad, in some cases laughably bad, like the ABC collaboration down there at Duke in North Carolina, or that laughable, the CHU study, the CHU meta-analysis that supposedly caused the World Health Organization, it was really political pressure, supposedly caused the WHO to change their masking guidance in the summer of 2020, June. That CHU study, the author was CHU, that meta-analysis, it even says right in it that their certainty is low. It literally says it right in the chart, so it's hard to miss, frankly. But now people are poking studies in even this best study that came out recently, this masking study from Yale set in Bangladesh. And Mark Recht, professor at UC Berkeley, he just posted a pretty good dissection of this paper. And Mark Recht says that he doesn't think you can conclude much of anything from this paper. It's a very small effect, a 1.1 reduction in risk. Compare that to vaccines, which is over 20%. So even the 1.1, though, it calls into question. And his main objections are that the paper doesn't really tell you how the seropositivity percentages are calculated. Seropositivity, of course, means the blood work returning a positive signal for the SARS-CoV-2 virus. And the paper doesn't really get into enough detail. It's 94 pages long, so it doesn't get into enough detail, according to Professor Recht, about how those seropositivity percentages are calculated. He also points out that a Gaussian model, which they used for their data, probably isn't the best one because they have so many cases at zero and nothing in the negatives. Imagine, you know, a Gaussian model is a bell-shaped curve. And so if you can picture that old XY graph from algebra class, trying to put a bell-shaped curve just in the positive X, positive Y quadrant on there, when the cases at zero on the X-axis are way bigger than the cases at the long tail end on the X-axis, that doesn't look very bell-shaped, does it? So that Gaussian model is questionable there. And finally, he notes that the unadjusted counts of positive individuals are not reported. It doesn't give you the raw numbers for how many people had tested positive, which is a bit suspicious given all the other details in the paper. Or perhaps not suspicious, but at least a missing piece of data that makes you go, So that's our last piece of news for the day. Now, we are going to do the second half of the program here, an in-depth look. It's going to be in a separate file, so jump on over to that lookup. You can see how our school managed to stay open all 5 days of the week in person, right from Labor Day, which is when we open, right from day after Labor Day, all year long. So go and check that out.